This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. I am grateful for your company on this lovely Sunday afternoon. In the next half hour, we'll review Marguerite Gallerini's tour of a private nonprofit school providing an alternative for some disabled students in Charlottesville. And we'll have Jesse Nadler's report on the latest chapter and the struggle by poultry workers in Rockingham County to organize. And we've got some musical healing with a story of cross-cultural unity from the Old Fiddlers Convention in Galax and a taste of Rwandan music and art, paying a visit to Charlottesville. But first, later this year, Charlottesville may add a new docket to its court system, specially geared towards people who may have mental health issues that factored into their running afoul of the law. WMRA's Jordy Yeager has this report.
Martin Coomer is a former Marine. He's also the superintendent of the Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail, which incarcerated around 4,000 people last year. It's one of nearly two dozen regional jails across the state. But Coomer says there's one thing jails can't do.
We all agree we are not psychologists and psychiatrists. Our staff, our correctional officers, are not psychologists, psychiatrists. Our police officers, this is not what we do. We're used to dealing with the criminal element, not mentally ill people who have committed crimes. And there's a distinct difference there.
And yet the largest mental health service providers in nearly every community across Virginia are the local or regional jails. Coomer is a part of a criminal justice group in Charlottesville and Albemarle that for the last 3 years has been studying the area's entire system. Probation, courts, police, jails. Specifically, they've been looking at all of these through the lens of mental illness, with the idea that maybe there's another way to treat it. Neil Goodlow is the criminal justice planner for the Thomas Jefferson Area Community Criminal Justice Board. He's been looking at lots of data, and one thing has stuck out.
In year two, we screened almost 2,000 individuals at the jail, and 495 of them met the minimum screening criteria for serious mental illness.
That's nearly one in four people who could be suffering from schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, severe depression, as well as the more commonly overlooked post-traumatic stress disorder or acute anxiety. And they do get some treatment at the jails, but not enough, says Coomer. And usually, when they get released, that treatment drops off. But Goodlow said the data also showed something more. It linked mental illness with recidivism. They looked at people who had been jailed four or more times over the course of a year, and the data showed that a small portion of the population, about 5% of those incarcerated, take up about 30% of the jail's resources. Or as Goodlow said,
they're in, they're out.
A lot of times the mental illness of these folks may relate directly to their crimes. Low-level misdemeanors such as trespassing, destruction of property, even petty larceny. And it adds up, says Coomer. First, there's the interaction on the street with police officers, where people with mental health issues are more likely to resist an officer's command or an attempt to detain them. They may not understand as clearly the consequences if they don't. Officers have been taught how to de-escalate those situations, but each interaction is a long process, and that's all before jail.
And then he comes here. Now my staff are dealing with them. So those one individual, that one incident, can occupy a lot of resources that now aren't being spent on other things. So they're pulling resources away from everybody else, and then they clog up the court system, and they're, you know, people there don't really know what to do with them.
The Criminal Justice Board recognized this, so they visited several mental health dockets that are still rare around the state, but becoming increasingly popular as they succeed in diverting people with mental illness from jail. It's similar to drug court, which has been operating locally for about 20 years. If a person completes the extensive treatment program, they get their charges reduced or dismissed. Last year, WMRA visited the mental health docket for Stanton and Augusta County. It launched 3 years ago, and since then, 14 people have graduated from the program with about a dozen currently enrolled, said Dave Pastors, the director of Blue Ridge Court Services. Graduates have gone back to college, he said, started businesses, and perhaps most key, reconnected with a estranged family, reestablishing their support networks. Pat Smith is the executive director of Offender Aid and Restoration, which handles probation and reentry services in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area. Smith says a local mental health docket could be launched as soon as December. She says it'll give police an added layer to their crisis intervention training, or CIT, which also helps divert mentally ill people from jails.
Because what we think is the referral process could come from any number of places, pretrial, the magistrates, the prosecutors even, the defense. the police. I mean, they want to be educated as well, because they have the CIT training. So this would be one more notch. Their CIT people might say, oh, I think this person would be a good candidate.
Smith said Charlottesville General District Court Judge Robert Downer has applied to the Virginia Supreme Court, which is expected to make a decision on the docket by the end of November. In the meantime, the group recently got a $64,000 state grant to fund a coordinator position, which will act as a liaison between the public defender, the Commonwealth's attorney, the Region 10 Community Service Board, and the judge. That money will fund the docket through next June. This week, Smith and Goodlow are set to meet with the city to discuss future funding options. They're quick to say that it's not a cure-all, but dockets have been shown to drastically reduce recidivism rates. And so from that standpoint, it's an investment. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
Children with disabilities are some of the most frequently suspended students in public schools, according to a recent report. What does that mean for the future of special education? More and more attention is given to alternative education programs. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini visits a special kind of school in Charlottesville.
Students with disabilities are suspended 2.5 times more often as other students in Virginia, according to a recent report from the Legal Aid Justice Center. One of the recommendations is to provide social and emotional learning programs.
If students aren't socially or emotionally healthy, it's hard to expect a lot academically. It's just not going to happen. So we really put a lot of emphasis on the social-emotional growth of each of our students, and academics always falls in place.
Brooke McCoy is a history teacher and the head of Park School in Charlottesville. Created in 2009, it grew from its initial base of only 2 students to up to 16 students. They have a partnership with American High School, a fully accredited private online high school. Kate Sizek is now the learning coordinator at Park School, but she was a special education teacher in the public school system, and she is concerned by the high suspension rate for students with disabilities.
I got so frustrated in the public school where there's so much pushing through just to get through, to get on to the next academic checkpoint, so that the behavioral teachings and checking in with well-being, mental health of students, it has to fall by the wayside just because of the sheer number of kids and the goal being primarily academic.
Suspended students then enter a spiral. They miss class, and then they fall behind, and then their whole academic achievement is at stake. 16-year-old Liza Phillips says it's different at Park School.
I've had times where I've missed something, and I've gone back to a teacher later and said, hey, can we find a time when we're both free so I can get a better grasp on it? You just don't have that access in other schools.
Quick little pre-assessment, okay? And it's going to help me know where you are with things.
To address the suspension issue, the Virginia Association of School Superintendents is working to put forward some recommendations for the Department of Education. Tom Smith, the legislative liaison for the association, says they would like more funding for alternative education programs and a better utilization of the Virginia tiered systems of supports, an alternate education process based on what researchers are learning about behavior in schools.
Right now, they are limited in utilizing that because of funding. Approximately 30% of school divisions out of 132 school divisions have been able to participate. We would like to see funding so that more could do that, so that we can work with these children that have difficulty before the situation gets to a point where they have to be suspended or placed in alt ed.
Back at Park School, Brooke McCoy says they're focused on variables that are harder to measure.
You know, the hard thing is monitoring progress. The kind of progress we see here isn't always numbers. It's not always scores. It might be a student, you know, is anxious going to math class for the last couple days. You know, those are the kind of progress monitoring that we see here.
That was the case of Carly, for instance, Liza's twin sister.
I used to be really bad at math, but I'm actually getting good grades now because I have teachers who can actually like stop and explain what everything means and give me the attention I need to actually learn how to do it correctly.
This nurturing environment does not mean children have no responsibilities.
They have chores every day. Since our school is a house, we do not have anyone who comes in and cleans and things, so that's up to the kids, you know? Mm-hmm. So they take a lot of responsibility for this place. We don't clean, they do it themselves.
Another big emphasis is community service. They have a requirement of 25 hours each semester.
Some of the kids were telling me earlier they're going to do a Defend Love project and start kind of an art gallery project to raise money for the things that transpired here in Charlottesville. Our kids really take a lot of initiative when it comes to their volunteer work.
According to Tom Smith, who's also been a superintendent in Fluvanna County and was director of special education programs for almost 40 years, such an engaging environment is really the key ingredient.
To be honest with you, the best discipline reduction process is to have children engaged in learning. And so when they're engaged, then they're moving forward and discipline does go down. I think programs like that, if they're structured, if they're well planned and funded, I think alternative education programs can be very productive.
For WMRA News, I am Marguerite Gallerini.
In their ongoing effort to unionize, aggrieved poultry workers in Rockingham County rallied again this month, this time outside the Cargill plant in Dayton. They claim the company willfully violates its own code of conduct, as WMRA's Jesse Nadler reports.
The aim of the protest was to deliver a letter to Cargill management. In it, they asked why the company has contracted with Peter List of Culture Consulting, which has a long history of breaking up unions. Union activists say that is a direct contradiction of Cargill's own code of conduct that states the company is committed to, quote, maintaining our employees' rights to freedom of association and collective bargaining.
Our interest here is that we want Cargill, we want them to live up to what they say they believe in.
Michael Snell Fikema is a local activist who helped draft the letter on behalf of the workers, the vast majority of whom hail from Central America or are refugees. Poultry work is notoriously dangerous, with high rates of injury and amputation. One union activist who was terminated last year for harassing employees says it was actually because of his union efforts, according to reporting in the Daily News Record. Another employee talked about being pressured to sign papers the company could later use against her.
They follow them around everywhere to see if they can find something that they're doing that they can use against them. It's sending the message, we're trying to fire you. We're going to fire you when we get a chance.
Cargill emailed a statement saying that it, quote, respects freedom of association and the right to collectively bargain, but also that Cargill has a right to, quote, provide facts to our employees about how unions work and what is at stake in a union election. The company also pointed out that under the law, workers have a right not to join a union. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
The presidential election of 2016 left many Americans wondering if there was any way to bridge some deep cultural divides in this country. How could Mexican Americans, for example, find common ground with coal miners from Appalachia? Well, not far from here, Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Houseman discovered the sound of unity at this year's Old Fiddlers Convention in Galax.
Many farm and forest workers in Southern Virginia come from Mexico or Latin America, and while their labor is welcomed, Latinos have not really integrated with longtime locals. To promote cross-cultural ties, the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities invited a unique Argentinian band to visit and play. It's called Che Apalache.
Che is ubiquitous in Argentina. It's a way of saying buddy or homie, your friend, pal.
Joe Troop is an American musician who lives in Buenos Aires. He teaches banjo to students like Martin Bobrick.
I've seen banjos and bluegrass music in cartoons when I was a little kid. Like Bugs Bunny or Doug play the banjo. Also, thanks to internet and YouTube, I found out that the name of the style was bluegrass.
Franco Martino and Pau Barjao also signed up for lessons, and the four soon began playing together, fusing traditional Latin songs with bluegrass. Here, for example, they use Appalachian instruments to present a tango.
Que el mundo fue y será una porquería, ya lo sé. En el 506 y en el 2000 también.
And at other times, they present traditional mountain tunes with a Spanish accent.
Well, I make me trip each and every single year. The god of many tell me I'm insane. I pitch a tip before it's dark along the fits and the spark, and you can mutter in the sun or in the rain.
We had to start from step one. It was like, what's a banjo roll? What's a G run? What is this culture? How's the syncopation? It's not like Latin American folk at all. So it was a learning process, but they were very fast.
Troop has also instructed band members on the subtleties of bluegrass performance.
How to deliver things with confidence. You got to put it out there. You can't be timid. That off-the-cuff nature of American music, I tried my best to impart that.
So far, Bobrick says the sound hasn't caught fire in Argentina's capital.
We wish that people would, like, get a little bit drunk and start dancing, but they are all, like, sitting with their hand on their chins and doing like, oh, listen to that, that's really interesting.
But during a month-long visit to Appalachia, Troop says their sound was a hit.
Sons and daughters of Latin Americans that were born in the United States coming up to us in tears saying, you know, you gave me an artistic voice. I identified with you guys.
And at the Old Fiddlers Convention, this song called The Wall won an enthusiastic response from a largely Appalachian crowd.
There's all kinds of talk about building a wall down along the southern border.
About building a wall between me and you.
If such nonsense should come true, then we'll have to
knock it down.
Cause that idea won't fly so high as a wingless bird in a rock-hard sky. So no siree, we won't comply. We're going to stand our ground. To love thy neighbor as thyself is a righteous law to live by.
But neither sing a different song.
They break us up so they stay strong, and ignorantly we're strung along until we meet our doom. Come friends, come friends, come gather round, for to sing, we sing with joy fled.
Let us sing about a better world,
where different paths will soon unfurl. No man's blood shall stain the soul of a land where freedom reigns.
In Galax, I'm Sandy Houseman.
Another kind of musical healing took place last year involving students in Charlottesville and musicians and artists from Rwanda. It's 6,351 miles as the crow flies between Kigali, the capital of Rwanda, and Charlottesville. But last October, a small group of artists made that journey, and they spent some time traveling around delighting schoolchildren here in the U.S. And WMRA's Emily Richardson Lorente was there in the classroom one day for that story.
Pop into Piper Gary's music class at Woodbrook Elementary School on a regular day, and this is what it may sound like.
All right, deep breath, here we go.
But recently, Mrs. Gary's third graders were treated to a different kind of music.
Those are Rwandan drums. Have you seen them before?
That's visiting teacher Pacifique Nyonsenga with his brother Patrick on the drums. They're here from Rwanda on a four-month trip to the U.S.
So, how you doing?
Good.
Are you happy this morning?
Yes.
All right. So
this is actually Pacifique's third time in the U.S. visiting schools, so he knows how to handle a class of rowdy third graders, now anyway.
The first time it was like, oh my God, because it was hard for me to even just make them sit down and follow me because everybody want to touch me, everybody want to hug me. But this time, I'm getting used to it.
We are from a place called Kigali. Do you know Kigali? Do you know Rwanda? Do you know Africa?
Pacifique isn't really expecting these kids to know much about his country or its story.
They don't care what's happening in the world until those things happen to them. They are kids. They are innocent.
One, two, three, let's go!
Pacifique was an innocent himself back in 1994 when the Rwandan genocide began. It lasted only 100 days, but an estimated 800,000 people died. 2 years old at the time, Pacifique was separated from his father and siblings and left alone with a mother who was too shattered to care for herself, let alone him. For years afterwards, he lived on the streets of Kigali until a Canadian missionary took him in and helped put him through school.
After I finished my high school, I decided to pay forward.
He paid it forward by founding a nonprofit called the Neo Cultural Center and Art Gallery in Kigali. Here, 120 deeply impoverished street children learn the arts, painting, dancing, traditional drumming, and singing, like what you hear right now. Pacifique's hope is that these skills will help his kids earn a living and give them the confidence they'll need to tackle what lies ahead, whatever lies ahead.
To be able to serve and help 120 kids, you need money, you need people to help, you need everything.
You ready? All right.
So Pacifique is here in the U.S. to raise awareness and funds. In addition to his drums, he's brought boxes of original paintings to share and hopefully sell. He also brought this guy.
My name is Fred Mafijiri, but I go by Figgy.
Figgy is a full-time artist in Rwanda, and he's brought several of his eye-popping nature paintings here. Think parrots and elephants made of exploding rainbows.
What's that color called?
Orangish.
giraffe. Today, Figgy's teaching a class of fifth graders to paint a convincing giraffe.
And I'm going to show you how we're going to mix them, right?
So back home in Rwanda, Figgy teaches lessons like this at Pacifique's Cultural Center. For the kids there, Figgy says, art is a kind of therapy.
I think it's supposed to help them live through this kind of, you know, hard world, you know. So art is a good thing.
You're going to want to wash your brush.
It's been a real learning experience for me.
That's Jim Respis, a sculptor based at the McGuffey Art Center here in Charlottesville. He's one of the many people who helped arrange this trip for Pacifique, Patrick, and Figgy. He's driving them around, making sure they eat, even hosting them in his home for a month while they're in Charlottesville.
I mean, I feel like I'm getting the best part of the whole deal because I get to hang out with these guys.
What do you hope students this age get from meeting Pacifique?
Ah, gosh. It humanizes the world in a way that looking at a map, looking at pictures, it doesn't work as well. And it normalizes what is a big, scary world.
Exactly. Can we do everything?
Yes. Yeah.
At a time when support for foreign aid and trade seems pretty low in this country, and fear of foreigners seems pretty high, Pacifique's visit is a bright spot. Reminding these kids here in Virginia that people from other places are still people, kind, funny, resilient, and with lots to offer for those who welcome them.
Yes! 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 Give me five, everybody! That was so cool!
For WMRA News, I'm Emily Richardson Lorente.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Jenna Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to support our news coverage, go to WMRA.org, mouse over news, then click on News and Information Fund. All our stories are archived at that website. Be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio and follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. And don't forget to keep up each morning with the WMRA Daily. It's our weekday early morning news podcast. You can listen at WMRA.org, but of course, anywhere you find fine podcasts, you can find the WMRA Daily there as well. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.